Good morning. I'm going to call the Tax Committee to order. And I think Representative Lesh wants to move House File 3687. He's being briefed momentarily, so we'll wait. Oh, we can't move it. We don't have a majority yet. A quorum yet.
I'm here.
Oh, hang on a second.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. May I have just a second?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I heard that. There's a whole bunch of love right here.
Yeah, look at that.
Okay, are we ready?
Yes, we're ready.
So, Representative Lesh, you have a bill and amendment you want to move for possible consideration, right?
Yeah, indeed, Madam Chair. I'm going to hold off on the amendment for now.
Okay. Do we have a quorum to take that motion? We do not have a quorum, so we're just going to begin on House File 3687. We can't yet move it, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
As to the bill, Madam Chair, members, you have heard this bill. You did hear this bill in years past. What it says is this: if you are booking through a different kind of model for a hotel, if you're trying to go book a hotel in Minneapolis, and you go to one of these online outfits that, well, they're going to dispute this, but that gets the rooms and then resells them, they do not pay tax on the increment above that. Let me explain it this way. If the room cost is $100 for the hotel, but the service charges $125, the cities collect the tax, the hotel and lodging tax, on the $100, but the travel agencies do not pay the tax on the extra $25 that you pay for that room. Now, the companies will suggest that, no, this isn't actually a room cost. This is a service fee that we charge. Now, what's happened is the tax laws were written prior to any of this kind of thing happened. So large companies like Orbitz or Travelocity or some of these outfits walked into a rather large loophole in avoiding taxation of what should probably pretty clearly be taxation on lodging services. They're suggesting that no, it's not that extra price that they get are not for lodging services. It's a service fee. In my opinion and in authoring this bill, I thought, well, if they want, if companies like that want special treatment for a portion of the cost of the rooms to not be taxed, well, then we can negotiate that separately as a matter of policy. But when it's pretty clear that you're paying $125 for a room, cities that charge lodging tax for that should expect that they're getting taxed on the $125. That's how we pay for different facilities that we have here in the state. So with that, I'd like just to introduce Susan Siegel, who is the city attorney for the city of Minneapolis and can more thoroughly explain this in detail.
Welcome.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to appear here. The city of Minneapolis, just to be clear, has not taken a formal position on this issue, but we have been watching it, and we briefed our city council on it about a year ago, and I've also had discussions with the Minnesota Commissioner of Revenue on this issue. And as Representative Lesh explained, these online travel companies follow a business model that they call the merchant model, where they purchase the hotel rooms at a wholesale rate, and then they advertise the room rates on their website, and the consumers, for all intents and purposes, believe that they're paying the online rate for the room. And so it is that delta, the difference between the wholesale and the retail rate being paid for those rooms, that is subject to sales tax currently under Minnesota law. There's been nationwide litigation over this issue. There are over 40 lawsuits pending now. The Supreme Court of Georgia has ruled in favor of the city of Columbia, Georgia, saying that they were entitled to collect sales tax against a couple of the online travel companies. There was recently, in October of 2009, a $20 million verdict in a class action lawsuit to collect sales tax in the state of Texas in a federal district court there. So it is an issue of that many municipalities and states are looking at. It depends on the language and the wording of the particular sales tax statutes. And Minnesota's sales tax statute is very favorable and has been the kind of language that the courts have said does impose a payable sales tax on this delta, the difference between the wholesale and retail price for the rooms. Under current Minnesota state law, a sale is defined as furnishing for a consideration of the following services, and that included in there is lodging and related services by a hotel and motel. And it's that furnishing of a room language that the courts have focused on. And then the Minnesota enabling statute allowing statutory and home rule charter cities to impose a local lodging tax has that same language in it, stating that gross receipts from the furnishing for consideration of lodging at a hotel, motel, etc., is subject to a lodging sales tax. Sales model, I also want to point out, for these online travel companies is different than that for other kinds of, some of the other internet sellers. And Ticketmaster is one example. And there happens to be a state tax court ruling involving Ticketmaster. What Ticketmaster does is they tell the consumer what the ticket price is, and then they add on fees. And there was a state tax court case about whether those fees should be subject to sales tax as part of the price of the ticket. And our tax court said, no, this is a fee, this is not part of the ticket price. These online travel companies, in contrast, kind of want it both ways. They want to say, no, the price for this room is the price that we designate, and they are not willing to go to this kind of fee model. And they have, legitimate business reasons for doing that, but that is, it's a different model than the Ticketmaster kind of model where it's transparent to the consumer.
Thank you.
Harpson Lesh.
I would just add, Madam Chair and members, that remember that this gets into what you can see the companies, the big online travel companies that who this would mostly affect are here in force to dispute this and reframe the issue as one of now starting to tax little mom-and-pop travel agencies. But they're here obviously because it's going to affect them most. It's not going to affect in near as much as it does the large companies, your mom-and-pop travel agencies in the small towns. This is something, and it's also not suddenly taxing where we hadn't taxed before. It's clear that the intent of lodging taxes were to encompass the price that a consumer pays for the room, and that's what we're simply trying to reassert here, because this is an emerging and growing problem of companies of this size being able to successfully walk into a tax-free loophole, which wouldn't be there but for the availability of the internet and the way the business model is moving toward for booking rooms. And I would just close with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone here who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Please, come down. I want to hear from everybody, and then we can have a discussion about it. Welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you for having me. My name is John Edmond. I'm Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. Thank you very much for having the opportunity to speak briefly about House File 3687. I'm really speaking on behalf of our Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. It represents all aspects of tourism in Minnesota. It's a 28-person council, and they advise us, Explore Minnesota Tourism, on issues and advice and marketing for the state. We've passed, as a council, a very limited number of resolutions in the past year, but this discussion of online travel company taxes has really been a heated discussion with a lot of different opinions on that. And I don't think we have a very clear understanding exactly. It's a very complicated issue. I'm not an expert in tax law, et cetera, but we do have concerns about the potential negative impact on our industry because our industry is an $11.2 billion industry. 16% of all sales tax in Minnesota is generated from the leisure and hospitality industry, and over 245,000 jobs. And when you look at the lodging sales, it's about $1.8 billion with an estimate of sales tax for lodging of $114 million. I think that's similar to some of the research the committee has done. Online reservations and booking services perform a function at marketing that is valuable to our industry in marketing available inventory and lodging of rooms in Minnesota. And it's also recognized as a mean for competitive shopping. Consumers do like to compete for price and price evaluation. And so due to the online service significance in the sale of lodging, any changes in the ability to operate or comply with laws compared to other destinations is really where our concern lies. So our tourism council basically came out with three main points on this bill. First of all, the implementation of any online company taxes in Minnesota should not distinguish Minnesota from surrounding states in a way that would negatively impact travel to Minnesota. So if it's more detrimental in this state versus next door in Wisconsin, we're concerned about what negative impact that would have to travel to Minnesota. Also, the lodging properties themselves must be held harmless, indemnified from any penalties result from compliance. The hotels don't want to necessarily be the entity that's responsible for actually collecting the tax and should not be required to collect tax on funds that are not paid directly to the lodging property. And then I guess the third point that our industry, our council made is that really this is a very complicated issue and that they almost prefer that it be dealt with on a federal level so that there's some fair playing field on this. So again, Minnesota is not distinguished from any other state. And Madam Chair, that's basically the position of the Tourism Council that I wanted to share with you today.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Edmund. Questions for Mr. Edmund first? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if you want it to be an even playing field, wouldn't you be arguing then that sales tax at all hotels should be the same? Because currently Minnesota's hotel tax isn't exactly the same as other hotel taxes across the state. So why should this part need to be uniform when hotel taxes aren't uniform across the country?
Mr. Edmund.
Madam Chair, Representative, I mean, that's a good point because it is different based on the local option lodging tax in any community. But what we're talking about is the online tax portion. I mean, there's been some discussions that if in Minnesota we are taxing online taxes and another state isn't, that differentiates Minnesota from Wisconsin or from Iowa, et cetera, and that could negatively impact the state as a whole. Right now, there is a lot of competitive difference from community to community, but this would be a statewide approach that it would affect Minnesota that would make a comparison of Minnesota to other states. And some of the concerns and comments that we've received back is that some of these online companies will say, if you're going to tax this, then we won't sell Minnesota. And I'm concerned as tourism director that that would hurt the state as a whole.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe Mr. Michaels could answer this question, or maybe you can answer it. But aren't there other things that other states already tax through the Internet that are taxed differently in other states, and companies that are national companies still do business in those states, correct?
Mr. Edmund. Madam Chair and Representative, again, I'm not a tax attorney, and that's why this is a very complicated issue. So our position was rather general to try to, I mean, it's up to you to wade through all of this to make sense. Again, my concern is that there isn't any retribution against the state of Minnesota that makes Minnesota unique. When you're talking about the universe of online travel companies, that they in Minnesota would say, no, don't travel here. That's where my concern lies. When you get into all of the other online issues of tax law, it gets kind of beyond me.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just then will make a comment. We tax differently than lots of other states in renting a car and staying in a hotel room. And even Brooklyn Center has a little local option tax on our hotel rooms that are different. And people don't not stay in our hotels differently than they stay maybe in Minneapolis or Coon Rapids based on that small amount. And so I just think that we should take that into consideration as well.
Thank you. And I think what would be helpful maybe before we finish, I know there are others I saw moving around at least to try to testify. I think I'm going to ask Mr. Michael and Ms. Dalton to just give us a little context on lodging taxes, first of all. I think Representative Hillstrom is bringing up the point, you know, we all, the whole hospitality industry pays the state sales tax, 6.5%, except if you're in Hennepin, you pay more. But, sorry for that editorial comment. Then all the lodging taxes, of course, are local taxes, and they're all very different. And there's a lot of different tax rates all across the state and all different communities, and maybe Ms. Dalton can kind of give us some reference on that. But I would ask also Mr. Michael to comment on the sort of, you know, the question that was just raised here and your testimony, Mr. Edmund, because I have to say I'm a little troubled to hear that the Explore Minnesota group is not really strongly in favor of this bill. Given that this bill, you know, that your organization is funded through the state and through deed and through, you know, things like sales tax, and this is not a level playing field. And so, maybe Mr. Michael can give us some context on the lawsuits, because I heard what you said. I think people are not saying it this way, but my sense in talking to people privately is there's a fear of retribution, that Expedia and Travelocity and other folks are going to sort of cut out these different hotels or cut out cities or whatever, and I understand that on a city perspective, and I don't think we'll hear any cities step forward and say, we, the city of X, wants this. But I do think when a state takes a position, you're not going to see the industry not book anything in the state of Minnesota. So I think the litigation that's been out there has been local units of government. So maybe Mr. Michael could give us some context on that, then we'll take more questions from Mr. Edmund. But if Ms. Dalton can give us some framing, and Mr. Michael, I think it'll just help us all to think about this bill. I want to recall for the committee, Representative Lesh did this bill last year, and another one just like it, I mean, kind of different versions, and I was trying to hint to everybody, as was Representative Lesh, so I think that we all have to deal with this, and I think it would be irresponsible if we don't. So we're back at it again. This issue is not going away, and I think committee members have to really start thinking about it. Ms. Dalton, can you give us a little context on lodging first?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is a general lodging tax authority in statute for all cities and townships. It's for up to 3%. 95% of it has to be used for the local tourism and convention bureaus. Those taxes can be collected either locally by the individual jurisdiction, or they may work with the Commissioner of Revenue and have revenue do the collection for them. In addition, there are 9 cities who have special lodging authority over and above that 3%. Most of them are, you know, somewhere between 1% and another 3%. And those are for specific projects like the Minneapolis Convention Center, a tugboat down somewhere in southern Minnesota, which I can't remember. No, not a tugboat, a steamboat somewhere in southern Minnesota, a tugboat up in on Lake Superior. So that's pretty much what we've got for local sales taxes.
Okay, and can I just ask further on that? You know, I noticed, just in my city, for example, because they're very complicated, there's a lot of things going on just in my city. I mean, they have slices of this much goes to the Convention Bureau, this much goes to the City General Fund, this much goes to the state, this much goes to defease the bonds for the Mall of America. I mean, I think members just should be aware all these taxes are really complicated depending on what city you're sitting in. And can you just, you know, expand further on what might all be going, that there's just a lot going on here for folks to think about?
Madam Chair, as Mr. Michael just pointed out, Bloomington is really very unique in how it splits up everything. However, there are 3 cities, Duluth, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, who not only have an extra rate, their rate actually splits depending on the size of the lodging facility. So there's a different rate if the facility has over 50 rooms or under 50 rooms. And then, as I said, there are a number of individual local lodging taxes. I was actually going to try to figure out which one is the one that had... it's Winona that does the steamboat. They have a 1%. St. Cloud has theirs for their convention center, but they're also using it for some other things, including some historical... renovating some historical theaters and things like that.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Michael, if you can talk about the litigation that's happening around the country.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as the city attorney from Minneapolis testified, there is a lot of litigation going on in other states, and I think almost all of this litigation, to my knowledge, I've got, you know, a thick file full of the decisions, but almost all of it has been done by cities or counties, local units of government. I'm not familiar with any cases where states have actually gotten to the point where there's a reported court decision on it. I think the concern raised by the witness about retaliation is a, you know, that's a live concern that the committee needs to think about. As the witness from Minneapolis indicated, the city of Columbus, Georgia, won a lawsuit against the industry in the Georgia Supreme Court, which held that there was an obligation to collect on behalf of that. And the stories, at least, that I've heard are that the industry then retaliated against that city by dropping listings of the hotels in that city, or, you know, listing hotels in neighboring I believe it's a suburb of Atlanta that was at issue. And so the natural thing, of course, to do is to, you know, list hotels in other suburbs or in the city itself. Whether or not that's a real possibility if the state undertakes an action like this is, I think, as the chair indicated, that, you know, it sort of raises it up a notch. Are they going to sort of implicitly or explicitly boycott the entire state of Minnesota? I don't know. But, you know, I suppose that's something you can think about. But on the other hand, it is an issue that, I mean, evidence indicates that the prices that these online sellers charge is not, you know, significantly different than the hotels themselves or the other agencies. And but there is, you know, because the markup, the Department of Revenue assumes that it's about a 25% markup, you know, that's a material tax difference that people are paying differently depending upon how they book their room. And so that's sort of a countervailing consideration, but, you know, it's hard to assess how the industry is exactly going to react to this.
Okay, do you have questions for Mr. Michael or Mr. Edmonds? Okay, because we have Coles and Anderson on Mr. Edmonds, but to Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton's comments, we can do that.
My question was for Mr. Michael.
Sure. Representative Coles, and then I think Representative Downey has something too. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Michael, can you talk to the, has there been any litigation, or is there a nexus issue here at all? If Expedia has no bricks and mortar in Minnesota, and I mean, are we able to assess this tax and be assured that there won't be a nexus challenge?
That's a great question, and I hope the chamber is listening. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, as the city attorney from Minneapolis indicated, almost all of this litigation has focused on statutory construction issues. What does the statute mean? Does it impose a collection obligation on these online companies? Does it apply to the full price that's being charged, or does it apply to the discount price? In the Georgia case, nexus was raised, and the court rejected the argument because it concluded that these agencies, through their contracts with the hotel, had more or less agreed to collect the tax. So that's the only reported case that I'm aware of where the nexus issue has been raised. My view of it is that I think that the state would have a very strong nexus case. And the reason for that is, you know, the Quill case, obviously, which is what's going to be raised, said that an online seller, in that case Quill or, you know, Amazon.com, obviously, is the, you know, the quintessential case, has no physical presence in the state and doesn't have other connections with the state that are sufficient to impose an obligation to collect. But in other cases, the U.S. Supreme Court has said, look, if you send solicitors into the state and solicit as agents, not employees, but agents, or if you hire somebody to do warranty service for you in the state, that's enough to create nexus and an obligation to collect tax. I think the argument that the state could make here and what the bill says is, in this case, you're contracting with a local hotel. to really deliver the service on your behalf, because what you're doing is selling a hotel room. And so what the state would be able to argue is, look, Expedia, what you've done is you've hired an agent in Minnesota to deliver this service. In other words, the service that you're selling is only valuable to someone if they can actually go to a hotel and check into a room and stay there. And so that agent is your in-state presence that creates nexus. I think that's the argument that would be made, and I think there's a very good chance that that would prevail. I pretty much guarantee they're going to make the argument. But, you know, so then it's a matter of assessing what the likelihood of prevailing is.
Okay, so Representative Downey, were you to Mr. Michael then before we go back to the list? Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is really just a follow-on or a new topic, but I'm just thinking about variations on the theme here, because I know travel operators, you know, buy blocks of rooms and then package them up with airfare and all of these other things, and frankly, for me, I'm paying for the value of the service provided on the upcharge, and so frankly, I don't care. Just like when I'm paying somebody to build my garage, I don't care what they paid for the metals. I don't care what Expedia paid for their hotel room. It's the value to me that I'm really concerned about, and thinking about other situations, weddings book blocks of rooms at discounted rates. And so maybe the question, Mr. Michael, is this really the very narrow situation where the travel company is actually simply operating as a sales agent and the room is being sold standalone, or does this apply to those more complex situations where there's bundling and bookings and group rates and those kinds of things, where in fact it's really just Travelocity buying some inventory and reselling it? I mean, do we have to do we have tons of shades of gray here that we have to slice, or is this a really uniform, easily applied principle?
And before we go to Mr. Michael on there, if I could also ask to two parts on that. I think there's a good question, because some of the travel booking is paying the tax and then the onliners aren't. So that I think is one part. But when you talked about the upcharge, were you talking about sort of a business-to-business tax where there's a tax embedded in the tax and you don't mind paying it? Because I think this bill expressly prohibits that there's sort of no double taxation going on, so they can't embed another tax in the new online tax. Were you asking about that when you said the upcharge, Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, actually, I did see that provision, and okay. I was wondering if that really made this bill kind of crystal clear in terms of the circumstances that it would apply, or are we going to have a million other examples that the businesses would present to us as their business model and prove that this thing is almost impossible to even collect on because the way they're bundling the rooms and things is so complex, and we can't really tax into that effectively.
Thank you. So, Mr. Michael, there's kind of two chunks there.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, the way the bill is drafted, it applies only in the circumstance where the intermediary is engaging in reselling rooms. And so if it's, the standard travel agency model is that you provide a booking to the hotel and then the hotel compensates the travel agency, that this would not affect that. What it would affect is where, Expedia or Travelocity actually says, you pay us X and we will provide a room for you. So they have to actually engage in the reselling of a room. Now, when you get into these, more complex situations where you're selling a package of travel services, I gather, where you're saying, well, we're selling not only a hotel room, but maybe we're selling limousine service and something else, then it's the usual deal where you'll have, somebody's going to have to unbundle that to figure out how much of that's lodging and how much of it's sort of non-taxable service. So it doesn't get into any of those issues about, other services that are not a hotel services that would get bundled together. Those would just be covered by the existing rules.
Okay, so follow-up, Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So couldn't these operators simply just redefine their service model and escape the taxation simply by calling it something different? I mean, are we really ever going to collect this tax, or are they just going to bundle it different and record the margin on the room as their income or their sales revenue for their services provided and the value they provided.
I think if we pass the law and it gets signed by the governor, it'd be illegal if they're doing that. But we'll probably ask Ms. Cadoon at some point to come forward and talk about the Department of Revenue's position on that, because they would have to do the tax compliance. I heard Mr. Edmonds' testimony. I think that's a legitimate concern, that the tourism industry doesn't want to be the cops in this scenario. The hotels don't want to police the Travelocity. We want to make sure the state is, and the state is, of course, doing that. But Mr. Michael, did you want to respond to that further?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, the sales tax always presents that problem when you get when you bundle together a taxable and a non-taxable service that has a, you know, a single price for it. And I think the sort of the general rule is that if you do that, you know, then you're going to pay tax typically on the whole thing. And so then they'll get into this business about separately stating, and then it will be an audit issue about, well, if you only charged $50 for the hotel room, but, you know, the going rate was, you know, twice that or what. Yes, there definitely will be audit issues on any of these bundling issues, and that's one of the dicey areas of the sales tax that, you know, anytime you have a tax that's not a comprehensive tax, it you know, you're asking for those kinds of disputes that need to be resolved.
Okay, so we have Representative Anderson, Loeffler, Broad. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Edmonds, when I was listening to your comments, I think the first thing that came to mind was kind of some of our border cities that we have, Duluth, Rochester, you know, Moorhead, Fargo, Moorhead area. And I'm just wondering, in looking at the states that have tried to do this, do we have any data on how their border cities were impacted by the change at all, or is that something you can maybe look into to see what kind of impact a change like this would have?
Mr. Edmonds.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have any data right now. In fact, I just met with all of my colleagues, the state travel directors in all of the other states, and every state is trying to wrestle with this right now. Because there are, as you mentioned earlier, 50 lawsuits all throughout the country, and so the exact impact of the outcomes of those lawsuits is uncertain. But I guess speaking on behalf of state tourism officials, there's a certain nervousness about what's happening. And that's my point about earlier on about hoping that there's a level playing field. It's not that as an industry we think that this tax is a bad idea. It's not. It's just how is it going to impact our individual states. And that's the problem when you have 50 different lawsuits, many different jurisdictions, and the online companies maybe treating one state different than the other. That's where our concern lies. But there is right now, as far as a 50-state perspective, there really isn't a unified position on this. But we're all struggling. Everyone is struggling with this right now. So, Madam Chair, Representative, not a very good answer to your question, but we can certainly look into it.
Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Edmonds' last point. I think there's also a struggle with, you know, sort of particularly the mom-pop operations when they have to pay a service fee when people go through the Internet, and that reduces their income as well. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of different trade-offs here, but my question was maybe to Ms. Dalton as to whether or not the Streamlined Sales Tax Group, the multi-state effort, has started to tee this up as an issue, because it seems like it would be nice if all states kind of said, yes, you pay whether no matter what.
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I'm Loeffler. I'm sorry.
Yes,
I do that occasionally. All the L's. At this point, I do not think that the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement has dealt with lodging taxes in terms of definitions. However, there is a multi-state effort going forward that I think Mr. Michael can talk about more specifically than I can, that is separate from the streamline.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, there is an organization that Minnesota is a part of called the Multi-State Tax Commission that consists of a number of states that help sort of assess both corporate and sales tax. And the Multi-State Tax Commission actually adopted last summer a model act dealing with this issue that Representative Lesch's bill essentially borrows the definitions from but doesn't follow the basic model. The difference with that, with the Model Act under the MTC, is that it, well, let me back up and go through the way Representative Lesch's bill works. It essentially follows the general sales tax model, which says when one of these online travel companies sells a hotel room, it will charge the tax on its full, on the full price, but it will be able to buy the hotel from the Minnesota hotel or motel as a tax-exempt sale for resale. That's the same mechanism that we use, you know, if when Target buys its goods from a manufacturer, it buys them exempt and then charges the sales tax when it resells to the customer. And that's the same model that's in Representative Lesch's bill. The MTC's Model Act uses a different approach that's more analogous to what a value-added tax is. And it says when the hotel sells to Expedia or Travelocity or Orbitz, it will charge the tax. That's sort of the way a VAT tax works. At each stage of production, the tax is levied. And then the next, at the next stage, they charge the tax again, but they get a credit for the tax that was paid at the lower level. So the MTC says for this, under the Model Act, rather than get a credit, you just charge on the differential. So essentially, you're collecting under the Model Act two different taxes. So the Radisson Hotel in St. Paul, when it sells to Orbitz, would charge the tax, and then Orbitz, when it sells again, would charge the tax, but only on that incremental difference. Whereas Representative Lesch's bill follows the normal model that Orbitz would buy the rooms from the Radisson tax exempt and then charge the sales tax on the full amount.
So, Mr. Michael, so is Representative Lesch's bill, can I just follow up on that, Representative Loeffler? Is Representative Lesch's bill would address the concern of the hotel industry, for example, that might say, hey, don't make us be the cops, because the way this bill is drafted ensures, in fact, that the hotels are not going to be dragged into that. Is that right?
Madam Chair, I suppose you could partially say that, but the hotels will be required to make sure that the online sellers actually have an exemption permitting them to buy these hotel rooms exempt for resale. So they still, inevitably, they're going to be involved in the, you know, in this somewhere or other.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler, did you have more?
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Representative Broad, and then we have more testifiers. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then, Mr. Michael, I'm just curious, the way it was described, and I apologize, I had a constituent I step out for, but the way it was described is that there's potentially a service fee that is in play. It's not just the, in terms of how these intermediaries consider their part of the deal. Is that correct?
Mr. Michael.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I am not totally familiar with the business practices of the industry. My understanding from my personal experience is that sometimes you will get an invoice that says you've paid, you know, basically just a room charge, and sometimes it's a room charge plus a fee, but it's, you know, it's a total fixed price. And the way Representative Lesch's bill is drafted, that total charge, whether it's separately broken out as a fee or not, the reference to the Ticketmaster case, sort of notwithstanding, this is written differently, that the price, if they're reselling a room and making room charges, then the total charge, including that for brokering or facilitating or whatever, would be taxable.
Okay, Representative Brown.
Madam Chair, and then Mr. Michael, so theoretically, if they considered a fee, we're putting a tax on a fee? Is that a fair characterization?
Mr. Michael.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Broad, yes, that's the correct way to characterize it, because currently, for example, in the traditional travel agency model, where the hotel pays the fee to the travel agent and then rolls that, obviously has to recover that in the room charge, that's already being taxed, and so you don't want to allow the online sellers to sort of say, well, we'll itemize the separate fee and that make that non-taxable. If you were going to do that, you would then appropriately probably need to allow the hotel to start subtracting from the charge that they levy on the normal, you know, booking service, the cost that they paid to the agent, too, so that everybody's treated the same.
Representative Broad.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Michael, then, is it fair to assume that most of these taxes on the fees or just plain taxes related to this provision would be passed on to the consumer? Or what percent of it would be passed on to the consumer?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, this tax is already on the consumer, and so one assumes 100% of it should be passed on to the consumer because it's a consumer retail sales tax.
Thank you. And Mr. Madam Chair and Mr. Michael, one more question. I'm trying to understand. I was thinking about a situation where that I had recently when I purchased something online. Mr. Edmonds, it was in a different state, so we should be okay. When I got my bill, I paid one package price, but when I got my bill, it was charged out, one by the hotel and two by the airlines, and then three by the service provider, the intermediary. So I got three actual charges on my bill. How then would this tax lie on each of those charges?
Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton, who wants that one?
And I was surprised too, by the way.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, without having more facts, it's probably hard to say, but what this bill requires is that the total charge that you incur to rent a hotel room, to use a hotel room, including the sort of the fees associated with facilitating or arranging or brokering that, would be subject to tax. Now, it's like the same thing that Representative Downey raised before. When you're bundling together other services like airline services or car services or something like that, then you get into the issue of, well, how much of this other fee relates to that versus how much relates to the hotel room. But the purpose for this is to tax the full amount that's charged to the consumer to use a hotel room as a lodging that's subject to sales tax or the local lodging tax.
One more question. And then, sure. Mr. Michael, is there any other cases in Minnesota where we tax service?
Ms. Dalton?
And I suppose we're going to get into oil changes and all those other things.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, actually there's a number of services that we do tax in the state, but I think I'd like to make another point. Let's say that Target bought toothpaste wholesale and charged you wholesale prices for your toothpaste, but then charged you a retail service fee on your purchase of that toothpaste because you came into their store and were served by them. That's similar to what's going on with Travelocity and those online. That may be a way to think about, is this a fee or is this really, a brokerage where they are buying rooms wholesale and then selling them retail.
Madam Chair, just follow up then. So is the, just for example, is the card that you buy to go to Sam's Club or Costco, the membership taxed? Because I would assume that that's a fee to bring the prices down in terms of their business model. I'm just curious the relationship.
Ms. Dalton?
I can make one. I'm not sure if anybody else can make one.
Where do you shop? Go to Costco, Sam's Club.
I said both,
Ms. Dalton? Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I don't shop at either, so I actually don't know, but there is actually a sales tax lawyer from the Department of Revenue sitting in the audience. She might actually know how that's dealt with.
And I don't know if you want to come up or wait until we bring the department up on a lot of this.
I can wait.
Okay, we'll wait. We're going to go to the author who wants to weigh in on his own bill. And then we have a testimony to get through and another bill still. So we want to, after Representative Lesh, finish the testimony. We can go back to the bill. Representative Lesh. Just,
thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to try to address Representative Broad's questions, but Ms. Dalton addressed it much better than I could. And insofar as cost being passed on to the consumer, Representative Broad, on a 3% lodging tax, on a $25 increment or difference, as it were, it's, I think, 75 cents. So, no.
Okay. Further public testimony on this bill. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chairman and members of this committee, my name is Brian Hoyt. I'm the president, vice president, just gave myself a promotion, vice president of communications and government affairs for Orbitz Worldwide, which is the leading online travel company based in Chicago, Illinois. We own OrbitsCheapTickets.com and Orbitz for Business, which is a corporate booking service here in the Americas. We also operate online travel brands eBookers.com in Europe and Hotel Club based in Australia, which is a hotel-only booking service that operates in 120 countries around the world. We are a travel promotion and marketing service provider that refers millions of travelers to Minnesota from destinations around the globe. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify this morning on why we strongly oppose this new proposed tax on the tourism industry. And I appreciate the opportunity to explain why we should all, for the good of tourism and business travel in Minnesota, come together in our opposition to this bill. I'll keep my remarks brief and will submit extensive comments to members of the committee following today's hearing, including I'd like to add a summary of the litigation cases where out of the 10 rulings on the merits of this case, 9 of them have gone in favor of the online travel companies. So 90% of the rulings have gone our way. I work for Orbitz, but I represent all the online travel companies today as a proxy for our trade association, the Interactive Travel Services Association, or ITSA for short. ITSA's members also include Expedia, Hotels.com, Priceline, Travelocity, but no one books on them. These companies join Orbitz and our offline travel agency, Torop. These companies join Orbitz and our offline travel agency partners who are going to testify as well today, and tour operator partners in the U.S. who oppose this legislation. 3 points I'd like to make. First, this proposed tax is based on a false understanding of how our business model operates and fails to appreciate how our business is modeled on an incentive program to help hoteliers fill their properties here within the state. The myth that led to this bill's creation is that the travel intermediaries buy and resell hotel rooms and mark up the price of those rooms. That quote-unquote markup, it has been suggested, should be taxed as room rent locally. The facts are these, and affirmed again by 9 of these 10 decisions that have happened, 2 of which are federal courts of appeal. The facts are these. We don't buy and resell hotel rooms. We take on zero inventory risk from hotels. So, for instance, there are no rooms from Hilton or Marriott in the storage shed that are about to expire, and we have to have a fire sale to get rid of them. We are not hotel operators. Therefore, local occupancy taxes on lodging rent should not apply to the service fees we charge consumers when we help facilitate a booking in this state. Understand that the courts have affirmed our position, including, as I mentioned, 2 federal courts of appeal that have ruled that travel intermediaries are not subject to local occupancy tax because our service fees are not hotel room rent, and the companies like Orbitz are not, quote-unquote, hotel operators. And again, the vast majority, 90%, have ruled on the merits of these decisions, have ruled in favor of our opinion of how this tax law should be interpreted. We've also heard the myth that we're collecting a tax on the retail rate and only remitting the tax on the wholesale rate. This, too, is a falsehood struck down by the courts. Even in decisions, by the way, that we've lost, I think it was mentioned in the Columbus case and in San Antonio by one of the other attorneys who testified. They ruled that this issue of we're collecting and not remitting is not supported by the facts. Hotels are responsible for paying tax on the room rent they charge, and travel intermediaries ensure hotels can remit every single solitary dollar of tax owed on the room that they charge consumers. In fact, travel intermediaries, through their promotion of this state, help put heads in what would otherwise be empty hotel beds. The end result is millions in local occupancy tax revenues made possible because of the bookings that we help facilitate in our industry. Second, this legislation fails to consider the incredible administrative and burden, created for travel intermediaries forced into being a taxpayer locally. We can't be taxpayers in the 7,500 different jurisdictions that exist in the United States today that have taxing authority. Our businesses simply are not set up to manage the administration and liability costs that would ensue for being a taxpayer in that many local communities, hundreds of which exist here in the state of Minnesota. For many travel intermediaries, local taxation of our fees will be a barrier to doing business in many mid-sized and small communities within this state. It's not being punitive. It's not retribution. We simply are not set up to facilitate a tax in that many jurisdictions. And as a business, we'll have to mitigate our tax risk if legislation like this is proposed. Unfortunate today, because travel intermediaries today help thousands of hotel bookings in big towns and small across the state. For large hotel chains and small independent hotels and motels throughout the state. The end result could cost many communities in Minnesota millions in taxable revenue as travel intermediaries, both online and offline, discontinue promoting and facilitating hotel room bookings in these communities. Well, I should add, small, independently owned and operated hotels are disproportionately impacted. Finally, this legislation fails to consider the amount of free promotion and marketing that travel intermediaries provide for Minnesota tourism. Administrative and liability costs aside, travel intermediaries make money only when we help hotels fill up their properties. We receive no commissions from hotels for facilitating bookings under the merchant model, and the service fees we charge get reinvested into the business so we can market and promote destinations in Minnesota down to the property level. And that investment in marketing in Minnesota to world travelers across the globe includes everything by investing in our own website. For example, you may have seen our ads with the hovercraft where another customer books a hotel room price at less price than you do on our site. We'll send you a check in the mail for the difference. That money comes out of our marketing dollars and ours alone. To buying keywords on Google, which is getting more expensive by the day, to higher levels of advertising like integration into our print, radio, and television ads for some of our bigger hotel partners. In closing, I understand some of you may have been told that this legislation is closing a loophole or clarifying an existing tax law. This is not true, and such statements fail to understand or appreciate how our business model operates and how we're incentivized to create demand and facilitate hotel room bookings in the state of Minnesota. Don't be fooled. This is a new services tax on tourism in Minnesota and something that no other state in the country has implemented. Some states have considered similar legislation, but in their deliberations, they opted to work with us to help us spend the marketing dollars we're already spending to promote the state better and more efficiently to position their cities and towns with consumers versus trying to tax our services, which will create, again, a lack of incentive to promote tourism locally. In truth, our marketing dollars we reinvest in our business make us the largest tourism promotion corporation in the planet as an industry. With all due respect, our industry would argue that such a tax is penny wise but dollar foolish, because this sort of revenue policy will ensure that less travelers come to Minnesota. Larry Summers, who sits on President Obama's economic team, recently said that now is the time to support demand creation businesses in the United States. This tax is not only counter to that philosophy, but it would be a sign to our industry that Minnesota is rolling up the welcome mat for tourism companies like ours that send millions of people to this state throughout the year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hoyt. Are there others who want to testify on this bill? I want to ask Mr. Hoyt a question. And please come up. I just want to make sure. Did you tell me, you said we simply just cannot tax all these different taxing. We can't find a way to collect the tax for in all these multiple jurisdictions that are out there.
There is not a software that, from a liability standpoint, will enable us to know what the 7,500 different local tax ordinances are, or the county ordinances, or the state sales tax ordinances are. The way the model works today is a hotel tells us what the local tax is. So imagine if you're a hotel, for example, you have one or two people at each hotel whose only job it is in life is to collect and remit the appropriate amount of tax locally for that local hotel property. You know, I have five people in my tax department back in Chicago who, you know, and a lot of my friends of the Democratic Party have said this is a great jobs program that we're creating, but we would literally have to hire hundreds of people to support that many different taxing jurisdictions around the U.S. And the business model just can't support that. And so we would be in a situation where we have to pick and choose where we do business. And it was mentioned we had the pullout of Columbus, Georgia. That's costing hoteliers their millions. Orbitz itself has had the pullout of other communities, unfortunately. And that's costing those communities as well.
Well, you know, Mr. Hoyt, I would just say that, just so you know, I've never heard it called a loophole. If someone's telling you that someone's pitching that around here, you may be right. I have not heard that. But I would say that Walmart and Target and others have figured out to do exactly what you're saying Orbitz can't do. And, you know, other vendors are doing this, and we are a part of what's called the Streamlined Sales Tax Project, and that's exactly the goal of that, is to make it easier for people like Orbitz and others to comply. And that's why it's so important bipartisan the state has supported that initiative, so that, you know, we're not making it difficult for businesses. But there are a lot of, worldwide businesses complying in all these areas. But, you know, I'll just tell you, I used Orbitz a lot this last fall, and
winter I was in Australia and in China, and, you know, I went on, I was just trying to do it with my assistant here, and I would just go on orbits and put in, you know, where I was going to the Great Barrier Reef, and then I could just book, you know, a hotel right there. And, of course, as a consumer, I'm completely oblivious to the fact, what's the tax there? I'm just doing it. But, you know, I guess the unfairness really for the state is, you know, you have competitors here in the state of Minnesota who are booking travel. There are the traditional travel booking agencies, you know, the Carlsons, and then there are the hotels, and they're all paying the tax, and then you're not. So if you could respond to that.
With all due respect, Madam Chairman, offline travel agencies developed this model of booking hotel rooms known as the merchant model for decades before mm-hmm. we ever even a figment in my mother's imagination. And Carlson and others have never paid tax on the service fees that they charge, which is why the American Society of Travel Agents soundly supports us in opposition to this bill. And I think we have a member from AFSCA okay. who's going to testify today.
And I'm happy to stand corrected. I assumed Carlson did as a traditional travel, but I'll just ask Mr. Michael then. I thought there were service parts of this industry paying the tax right now for booking. In that, you know, are not the online community in Minnesota. Mr. Michael, can you comment? And I could be completely wrong here. I thought there were.
Madam Chair, I think the witness is indicating that other entities other than online bookers that use this merchant model essentially pay tax the same way they do, and that's correct. What I was referring to was the sort of traditional agency model where the agent is compensated by the hotel, and then it gets rolled into the room and that, or if you book directly through the hotel, then, you know, there's no option for sort of saying there's a separate entity that's collecting a service fee that's a non-taxable service.
So it
really does come down to sort of what model you're buying your okay.
So if I'm booking a place in Cairns and but I use a travel agent, they pay the tax. If I call the Sheraton in Cairns and I do it, they pay the tax. But if I go online or use a Carlson that's using this model, I don't pay the tax. Is that right?
Madam Chair, I think that's the right way to characterize it, that it really depends upon the arrangements between the travel agency and the hotel.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please stay. I'm sure there's going to be more. There's a lot in this bill, and we want to get it right. Yes, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me a brief time here. I actually come to you today as past president of the Minnesota Lodging Association and also a partner in the Madison Hospitality Group that also operates hotels throughout the state of Minnesota. Interesting enough, both parties, Mr. Edmund and the gentleman that was just here prior, are both correct. The online travel agencies have its place in this industry and has done a great job as it relates to those independent hotels being able to get their presence out on the web and being able to book rooms and so forth. Mr. Edmund is also correct from the standpoint that it may be better to take this issue from a national standpoint, which currently is now being addressed as well in Washington. And this is a very complex issue. From the Minnesota Lodging Association standpoint, all of the online intermediaries, if it be Orbitz, Expedia, Hotels.com, Cheap Tickets, and the others, a billion that are out there trying to fill our hotel rooms every single day, it is very, very complex. The Minnesota Lodging Association has taken this position in regards to this because it's a hot topic not only here but in communities and in states throughout the United States. It's taken the position of really no position relative to the taxing authority. Most importantly to us, whatever really comes down in regards to the taxation piece, and I guess I reference it simply from the standpoint the gap piece, if it is that $100 room that is being sold out there and we from a hotelier standpoint is collecting $70. If in the event from a federal or a state or a local standpoint elect to impose a tax on that $30 gap piece, we just don't want to be the tax collection agency in regards to it because it does come very complex for us. We pay our taxes every day and ensure that they're paid on time. But most importantly, the online travel agencies do our industry a great service, but at the same time, we need to make sure that everything is fair and that taxes are paid potentially evenly across the board.
Did you say your name for the record?
Yes, I'm sorry I didn't. Kirk Schultz is my name.
Okay.
And I'm past
Thank
president
you, Mr.
of
Schultz.
Minnesota Lodging.
Appreciate it. Are there others who'd like to testify for or against this bill so we could get all the testimony done? We have Representative Liebling's bill, too. And I do want to ask the assistant commissioners here to comment on the bill. I think it would help us. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Stephanie Lee, and I'm from TravelQuest. We're located out in Albertville, Minnesota, and I live in Minneapolis. And I'm here as a representative of ASTA, located out in Washington, D.C. It's our trade organization. And we're opposed to the bill that's being proposed today. And I have some statements prepared. I know we're running short on time, so I'm not sure if you want me to go into the seven-page thing that they prepared.
You can give it to us, and we'll make copies for everyone. We generally appreciate when people don't read to us anyhow. So if you just tell us your thoughts, I'm sure you know them in your head. That's probably a better use of your time.
Yeah, so I guess the main point is we're not, as a travel agency, we're a very traditional mom-and-pop travel agency, but we're not on the merchant model. But it is something that a lot of travel agencies are switching towards just because I'm sure many of you know after September 11th there was a lot of change in the industry. So it's not quite as feasible now as it was. You used to make a lot more commissions, and a lot of the commissions were cut. So there are a lot of new ways travel agencies are trying to make up that difference. So our concern is the same as everyone else that was up here, is that it makes it a little less feasible to operate successfully. Let's see. Another concern of mine, I guess, that was also brought up by the Explorer Minnesota is that with the whole tax structure of it, our business is pretty small. We have 7 full-time employees, 3 of which are in my family. So my dad is the accountant, and he's a full-time firefighter from Minneapolis as well. So he does the accounting on the side, and while he's very good at it, I do have concerns about his ability to be able to deal with the tax structure if it gets a little bit more confusing. And then we also have, hopefully my dad won't hear this, he's very competent at his job. I know. He works for the city too. Great. But yeah, I don't know if you guys have any questions for me. I'm not a lawyer. I was going to read from this, but we can just go from there.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ms. Lee, and appreciate your testimony. But we will, if you want to give, if you don't have a copy, we can an extra. We can make one for you, and then we can distribute your testimony to the committee as well, and one of our pages can take it from you. So. Okay. Thank you for being here. Others would like to testify for or against this bill? Anyone? Nope. Ms. Canoon? Can you weigh in from the department on all of this? A couple things going on, you know, the tax, but also we're going to ask one of you to give up your chair for Ms. Canoon. We're going to have Ms. Canoon join us at the table. Can you talk to us about the, you know, the compliance issues? I mean, if this were to happen, I mean, you're already, the department is dealing with all kinds of bundled issues, so that's not new. So, I mean, just any thoughts and comments on the bill, you know, all of it?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would think what Mr. Michael said earlier regarding the bundled transactions, I agree. That would be something hopefully we could, you know, provide hopefully some guidance and things in effect, you know, the revenue notice or a fact sheet, providing guidance on how this would be implemented, as well as I'm sure that would be then a question and something they'd look at in audit cases as well. So, yeah, I don't see that would be probably as a new item. If you also wanted me to just comment on the bill in general,
please.
I can certainly do that. Regarding this area law, we agreed as kind of administrators of the tax that if we really wanted to tax this activity at the state level, that we thought it was probably best to do legislation. So it would be clearly that the industry would then be put on notice, as well as make sure that the legislation then was as clear as possible on what activities would be taxed or not taxed. So that certainly was the department's position regarding that. We also, as was mentioned earlier in the testimony, that this was such an unsettled area of law with all the litigation that was going on that we really didn't see kind of a benefit for the state and the Department of Revenue at this point to kind of jump on that litigation bandwagon. So that's why you didn't really see us moving anything regarding the tax for the lodging intermediary services. It was mentioned also regarding the multi-state tax commission that Mr. Michael mentioned. It's my understanding that that legislation was proposed by the Uniformity Committee And that my understanding as well that the executive committee has not officially adopted or not. So it is legislation model that's out there by the MTC, but then has not been formally adopted. I don't know if there was other points or questions that you had for us at this point.
Okay, thank you. We have Broad and Downey. Reps and Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Cadoon, I'm just wondering, there's the controversial issue out there related to baggage fees that are charged at airports. Do we tax those baggage fees?
Ms. Cadoon, do you know that? Or Mr. Michael? It's going for the microphone. Maybe he knows. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, federal law preempts almost all taxation relating to air travel, and so that is something that's preempted by federal law.
Okay. Great.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and people have probably figured out where I was going with that one related to taxing fees again. I'm just curious. I was reminded, actually, by Representative Kahn in committee the other day that we still have in statute that fees are taxes and taxes are fees, and so I'm intrigued by this idea of taxing taxes. So I'll look forward to continuing this conversation.
Okay, we do want to get to Representative Liebling's bill, so Representative Downey, then closing comments from the author. Representative Downey.
Pass.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you.
You've mixed it up.
Before closing comments, I do have one question for Mr. Michael and Ms. Dalton, if I could.
Yes, please.
Thank you. And Mr. Hoyt did, in conversations in my office prior to this hearing, say that the price is set, and it's his contention that, no, it's you get charged $125. The hotel, cost of the hotel is $100, but they do a $25 fee. There's some discussion between, say, Orbitz and hotel on what that price should be based on what's going on in the market and availability. Could conceivably the hotel and Orbitz agree that the price of the room that's taxed is $30 and the fee is $100? And therefore, they only have to pay the tax on the $30, and there be a kickback somehow that furthermore is not taxed. Is that something that would be feasible?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, anytime this essentially what we're dealing with here is a bundling issue, and anytime you have a bundling issue and you're allowing the sellers of a taxable service and an exempt service, which is essentially what the industry is arguing here, that essentially a hotel room is being sold and then some ancillary non-taxable services are being sold. And if the private entities are allowed to determine the split between that, it does create the potential for essentially reducing or minimizing, avoiding, evading, depending upon how far you go, taxes. And of course, one of the issues that's been raised is the potential for hotels, for example, to set up captive subsidiaries or affiliates where, you know, either one hotel or multiple hotels go together. And of course, then, you know, it's like all within the family. And so what does it matter whether we call something a room charge that's taxable or some other kind of service that's not? So it's correct. Anytime you have bundled services like this, you open up the opportunity for essentially manipulation.
And Madam Chair, if I could, I'm not here to put devil horns on the industry's head. There are creative lawyers in every industry, and there's a recent lawsuit in North Carolina where Walmart was no longer owning their stores. They set up a dummy corporation and leased back to Walmart in order to avoid taxation in that way. You know, good for them to have smart people. I mean, there's the Enron documentary, the smartest people in the room. Not saying we're Enron here at all. I'm just saying there's really smart people whose job it is to learn how to avoid on a certain business model tax. It's the job of this committee to ensure that we have that under control. And if it's our decision to allow for it to be called a fee, wink, wink, you know, your guys' industry is promoting Minnesota, sending jobs here, fine. But by just letting it lie, we are not addressing a very growing problem that is going to continue to grow because of the increasing availability of Orbitz, Travelocity, Priceline, some of these other outfits. So that's why the bill is being brought up. I am willing to absolutely listen to the industry as we go forward here, but keep in mind that it's this job's or the job of this committee to decide where we draw the line, not the job of the industry.
Okay, thank you for this hearing, Representative Lesh. And Representative Lesh now moves, because we never did, House File 3687 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. We're going to lay it over for possible inclusion.
Madam Chair,
thank you, Representative Lesh. And we're going to go to Representative Liebling now. Representative Liebling, did you want to move your 3785? We're short on time, and, you know, if we don't have enough time to complete this discussion, we're going to come back to it again, Representative Liebling, because I think you have a really another creative attorney, as Representative Lesh was just talking about, has a creative bill here. Representative Liebling moves House File 3785 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And Representative Liebling also moves, did you want your amendment moved?
Yeah, I think so, Madam.
Her amendment, the A1 amendment, discussion to the amendment to get the bill in the order the author would like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carried. The amendment's adopted. Representative Liebling, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. This is such an interesting discussion on Representative Lesh's bill. And, you know, I just have to say I really enjoy this committee a lot of times because we really do have some very interesting discussions. Members, the bill before you really grows out of the discussion we had over tax expenditures, not the name. You know, we can call them whatever we want, but just the information we got in the tax expenditure report about the existence of what I think is more appropriately really called tax preferences. What this bill does, I just want to explain, it, the way it's set up kind of, I think, tends to mislead people about really what the intent of the bill is a little bit, because the bill is intended really to be a transparency bill. I think it was Socrates who said the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, I wouldn't say that the unexamined tax code is not worth having, but I think that the unexamined tax code is probably less efficient, less fair, less transparent, and less predictable than it could be. And so the object of this bill is simply to have the legislature on a rotating basis simply examine all of the tax expenditures in the code. I am not, with this bill, presuming that any of them would go away. I'm not passing judgment on any of them. I'm simply saying that we should be looking at them on a continuing basis. It's very important that we make sure that there is fairness, that our tax expenditures are meeting the goals that they're supposed to meet, looking at their impact on taxpayers, making comparisons with the neighboring states, all the kinds of things that we like to talk about in this committee, and doing it on a predictable basis, ongoing. And that's really what this bill is about. What the amendment does is push out the effective dates a little bit because there were some concerns from the Department of Revenue about how easily and quickly they could implement this. And we do not have a fiscal note yet on the commission that would be set up in the bill. But I think that the amendment might take care of that as well by pushing this out past the current years that we're concerned about here. But this is a sort of a wave that's going on in a few other states. Ms. Dalton did some research for me, and this is modeled after a bill that's been introduced in Washington State. Oregon passed something like this in 2009. Some other states are looking at doing this very thing. And I just think that this is a kind of a good government bill, and those people who are interested in zero-based budgeting, I think, should be interested in this kind of a process, because bipartisanly, I think we all have an interest in making sure that our code does what we want it to be doing. And in order to start making sure that happens, we need to know what it's doing. And the public needs to know what it's doing, which I think is one of the great problems that we have, that we have such complexity in our tax code. The public has a hard time seeing and understanding what we're doing, and those are all issues we should grapple with. So what the bill does is it sunsets, it breaks the tax, various kinds of tax preferences into different categories, and sunsets a category, has us looking at a category every 2 years. It sets up a commission to basically make a recommendation at the beginning of a term for us to make a recommendation, and the purpose of that is to give us something to work off of, because, you know, our process is really hard for us just to, you know, we do things piecemeal around here. This is to get away from the piecemeal nature by giving us a recommendation to bounce off of and then giving us the two-year cycle before that particular category would sunset, so that we, the legislature, would have an opportunity to reauthorize or tweak a particular category or let particular items sunset. So that's what this does. And then on a rotating basis, each thing would be again examined every 10 years. 10 years, I think, is a long enough time to give predictability, because we all know predictability is really important for tax planning as well. And although I've heard some concerns that this might, you know, having things sunset disturbs predictability, I actually think it's the opposite. Because as everybody knows, we can get rid of something at any time. And what this just means is that, you know, that once it's been reauthorized, it's been looked at, I think the chances of it lasting for 10 years are actually probably better than if somebody goes after something, the tax code, sort of willy-nilly. So I think I'll leave it there, Madam Chair, and take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Leland. Is there testimony for or against this bill? Anybody want to come and talk to us? I see one. And while he's coming down, too, Representative Liebling, you know, I just want to remind, I think this is great, and I just want to remind committee members that the jobs bill that was passed and signed into law by the governor this year with only, I just asked Ms. Bergman, only 20 no votes, which is pretty overwhelming in the Minnesota House of 134 members, 20 no votes. We used expenditures to pay for other expenditures. I personally wasn't too happy about the incidence of the low income going for it, but I think legislators are sort of getting now that tax expenditures are just hidden spending, because the bill was signed because hidden spending was used to pay for other spending. And that's exactly what it was. It was a tax expenditure buying other tax expenditures. And also of note, something that rarely happens around here, and I want to thank the good work of the tax committee, the two new credits that were brought into new tax expenditures that were brought into law, the Angel and the Historic, are both sunsetted. And they are required now under the new jobs bill to be studied and sunsetted, and it will take an action of the future of a future legislature to decide if they're worth keeping. So I think it's a coincidence, but your bill is sort of like what we all just went through, and I don't think people should be afraid of it. We just did it, and we had overwhelming. I think it passed with 63 votes in the Senate, so very similar. So please, committee testimony. Welcome. Welcome, Ms. Berger.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. We do find that the review of this bill is great. We think reviewing tax expenditures and other tax-related programs, direct tax expenditures, is a good idea. We're all for transparency. What makes us nervous and what we're the part that we're opposed to in this bill is the automated expiration and the sunsetting. Let's review these tax expenditures and also direct tax appropriations. Let's review them and see if they're means tested and so forth. But just having an automated expiration date is in our opinion, not so good. The legislature can, after reviewing the reports, they can make a decision at that point. If something is worthless or not meeting its intended goals or purpose, then the legislature can move to eliminate it at that time or change the program, but having an automated expiration is something we don't favor. There are other tax appropriations, direct government expenditures that would not be subject to the same types of examination, like LGA and market value credit. They don't receive the same type of analysis that these tax expenditures would be receiving. They're not, they don't expire every year. They don't get a renewal every year. And so we would just, you know, if tax expenditures are going to be examined, then maybe other government appropriations should be examined in the same manner. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Reinert, were you to Ms. Yep. Berger? Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Berger, I guess my question is explain to me a little bit more your opposition to the automatic expiration, because to me the automatic expiration is one of the most valuable parts of the bill. It forces the legislature to take an affirmative action on making these choices versus staying on cruise control. Your organization obviously has concerns about the mortgage interest deduction. We've had that conversation before. So I want to be clear. Is it, you know, don't gore my ox, or is there a process argument to be made?
Ms. Bergman. Berger. Sorry. Ms. Berger.
Sorry about that.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think one of the reasons we're concerned about the automated expiration or sunset is that would potentially take us off of federal conformity. There are other provisions in our tax code that aren't, that do not receive this automated expiration, and so we just think, for consistency's sake, it should be the same.
Mr. Michael, can I just ask, and then I see Representative Dietrich's on this point. You know, part of the reason I've always wanted us to spend time on these, and we've been doing that, is because I do believe almost all the appropriations do stop. In fact, I was here when government shut down. If we don't pass a budget, they get turned off. And there are some things that keep going, but it is the tax expenditures that stay in perpetuity without review. It is actually, I do believe, and I just want to ask Mr. Michael, and that's kind of unfair because he's not fiscal, but, or maybe someone else, I think LGA and all those things just disappear if the legislature doesn't come to an agreement, if the government shuts down, and you know what, tax expenditures just keep going. I think it's kind of the opposite. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am not an expert on state spending side of things, but appropriations need to be divided into two categories. There are what are called standing appropriations that continue on in perpetuity until the legislature changes them. Most appropriations, of course, are the type that you're all familiar with that only apply for the biennium or a fiscal year, and unless the legislature in the next biennium reenacts them, there is no money. But there are standing appropriations, and those include things like the appropriation for LGA has a standing appropriation, okay, and for some other property tax related provisions. In school finance, it used to be they had a lot of standing appropriations. I don't know the status of that now, but there is some direct spending that is continued without sunset.
Thank you. And I guess, you know, I'm kind of out of my league on that too. Both Representative Carlson and Solberg aren't in the room right now, but there are ones that do shut down and others that keep going, we just heard. And I don't know what the proportion is, but I do recall the government shutdown when everything literally started shutting down. Representative Liebling.
Well, Madam Chair, I think one of the big differences between the forecast, these expenditures like LGA and what we're talking about here, LGA, although it's automatically continues unless we change it, it's in the forecast. When we do our budget, we have a forecast amount for LGA. We see what it's going to be. And we see that LGA gets examined quite a bit. It gets talked about every year I've been here. It's a big issue. So it's on the books, so to speak. The problem with tax expenditures is a lot of times they're kind of under the radar. I don't want to say off the books, but they are under the radar. So that they just go on, it's a kind of spending, if you want to call it that, or foregone revenue, I think might be a more neutral way to even say that, a foregone revenue that we're not even looking at it, and that's exactly the problem. So when we say, the witness said, talked about every year, it isn't getting looked at every year, I would argue that LGA is getting looked at pretty much every year, but I'm not proposing that we look at tax expenditures every year, just every 10. I think that's a real important difference, and if we don't do that, the automatic here is that it is on, those are on automatic pilot in a really big way, much more so than forecast spending.
Okay, and I know there's more public testimony. Ms. Berger, and then Representative Dietrich has a question. Ms. Berger, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to clarify, we're fine with the review. We're fine with looking at the tax expenditures and other programs. We just don't like the automatic sunset.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question, but I have some comments. Would you prefer that I wait until after for closing comments? Okay. I want to applaud Representative Liebling for bringing this forward. In fact, it very much resembles some of the property tax work that we did last year. When in part of our property tax division, we embarked on a study of what are some property tax principles that a good property tax system should have. And so I went right to what the report would include, and I would encourage you to have the conversation with Ms. Schill or myself as to what were some of the property tax principles mm-hmm. that we found, because I think that they are Some of them reflect what you want the report to include, but I think that there are some others. For example, is the piece of legislation or is the tax expenditure, is it transparent or not? Is it simple or is it highly complex? Is it efficient or not efficient? Is it responsive to the current economic conditions or not? Is it uniformity or fair, like you've included in your list? But I think, and so to my point is that I would just encourage that your report not become so bogged down in the gray areas that it really does mean something. And then I would also challenge you to hold even then future legislative bodies accountable. We actually said that this scale would go on any revenue statement that the department put out and that they would evaluate it. And the department actually said they could do that at a very minimal cost, and they would actually welcome it because they talked about our property tax system becoming so complex that at some day that we are going to break the system. And so I would just encourage you to look also into those two different areas that I just mentioned. But I really applaud this. I think this is just phenomenal.
Thank you for that, Representative Dietrich. And for folks who don't serve on property taxes, Representative Dietrich really put together quite a proposal and worked very hard on it. It was excellent and was carried in the omnibus bill, but I guess we didn't quite get it through the Senate, but try again. No, it was excellent. And I, too, encourage you to look at Representative Dietrich's work, Representative Liebling, because I think it really you'd be impressed. We have Representative Anderson and Loeffler. I guess we still have the room, so we'll do that. But let's take, if that's okay, I'd like to take Mr. Hesse's testimony. Mr. Hesse, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber does oppose this legislation, and before I get into the reasons why, I do think that reviewing tax expenditures is a positive thing to do, and I don't want my comments to be construed as opposed to that part of the bill about regular review of tax expenditures. And whether the review is done by a commission, as the bill suggests, or as this committee has done the last several years with the current staff, I'll leave that up to you to decide. But that sort of review and looking at the pluses and minuses and incidence of various tax expenditures is a positive thing. With that, we do strongly disagree that tax expenditures should be regularly sunset, and we do so for two reasons. First, as was alluded to, businesses like certainty. And just take, for example, some of the items that have been debated in this committee over the last two or three years: the research and development credit, the foreign royalty deduction, foreign operating corporations, the sales tax on capital equipment purchases, for example. All of those have either been, at least the first three that relating to the corporate income tax, there's been legislation to either repeal them that have certainly been debated in this committee and even been made into the omnibus tax bill. Why that's relevant here is it puts into businesses' minds that some of these credits and deductions might not be around forever. When you add to that the fact that now they'll be periodically sunset, I think there could be some significant consequences to this legislation. When a business is planning a significant investment, it's going to do it where it believes the law is stable and maybe even trending in the right direction. If there's instability, if there's uncertainty, the likelihood of those investments being made elsewhere, I think, increases. I think you have to remember in the background of all this, Minnesota has one of the highest corporate income tax rates in the nation. If a company is going to evaluate Minnesota with the possibility of some of these deductions and credits, especially the research and development credit, the foreign royalty deduction, the foreign operating corporation deduction, that they might not be available in the future, the state is certainly not going to fare as well on a multi-state comparison. And let me just talk a little bit about capital equipment purchases, too. Many folks think that the tax code shouldn't move events from one period to another, but if you sunset the sales tax exemption for capital equipment purchases, you might all of a sudden have businesses purchasing a lot of equipment in one fiscal year, have it all dry up in the next fiscal year, and you could, or they've already made their investment that they're planning to make in the next fiscal year. So there could be some ups and downs and swings in state revenue because people are hedging their bet, making some choices in one tax year compared to the other. The second reason is if this proposal moves forward, we think the definition of tax expenditure should be examined significantly. And this bill does not have anything to do with my second part of the comments, but you know, the definition of what is a tax expenditure will really matter because everything is sunset. For example, most economists believe that business input should not be subject to the sales tax. Yet it's a tax expenditure of any business input that is currently subject to the sales tax, or is not subject to the sales tax, is considered a tax expenditure. Capital equipment. We even have a refund program, so we technically, businesses don't have to pay the sales tax on capital equipment, but the fact that we have a refund program and get the money back is a tax expenditure. The fact that we don't pay sales tax on legal and accounting services is a tax expenditure, even though, again, most public finance economists believe that they ought not to be in the sales tax base to begin with. Another example of issues where I think the definition of tax expenditure matters is even on the apportionment formula. I looked at the definition in Minnesota law of tax expenditure, and I can't figure out how the apportionment formula fits that definition and is included in the book. And maybe since more and more states are moving towards 100% sales weighting on the apportionment formula, we should rethink of what the definition is. If we're successful, and maybe one more example, if we're successful at repealing the corporate income tax in the future, and I'm hopeful that someday we'll be able to do that and appreciate the chair's efforts to that extent, I'm also wondering if then that will be considered a tax expenditure. And the sunset will be, we'll have to reinstate Minnesota's former corporate income tax, 10 years down the road. So I think there's just a lot of issues about, the stability of Minnesota's business tax climate specifically that we're concerned about. And then finally, I'm reminded about a panel of CEOs that spoke several years ago at a Twin West Chamber of Commerce event. And one CEO stated, and I certainly won't be quoting since it's long ago, but said it's not only what you pass, but it's what you propose that matters. And again, this body has considered legislation that would have repealed the repealed the R&D credit, repealed the foreign royalty deduction, repealed foreign operating corporations. We'll hear that again either later this week or next week. You've already planted the notion that there's a lot of uncertainty in Minnesota's business tax code. Adding on to that the sunset of a variety of other provisions we just don't think is very helpful. And we think you can accomplish the goals of this bill, the author's goals of this bill, without the sunset provision. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I think, and to that point, I think, is Representative Marquardt, and then we have Anderson. No? Okay. You want to respond, Representative Weebling, and then Representative Anderson?
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, certainly these definitions are certainly a big issue, and actually our amendment takes care of that because it has the Department of Revenue working to working on some definitions before any of this would go into effect. So that, I think, is one of the benefits of the bill, that we would get some clarity around some of these issues from this bill. And certainly, as I said before, the predictability is important. I was just this morning, Life Science Alley put on an event, and there was a CEO of a medical device company talking about how even just our discussing certain changes, change their investment pattern until things got to be more certain. They didn't make an investment they otherwise would have just because of uncertainty. I think this kind of a bill really makes it less likely that people are going to come in and randomly try to take away a certain tax expenditure when they know that it's being examined on a regular basis. So I would argue that it would have the effect of injecting more certainty rather than less.
Thank you. Representative Anderson and Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions, and then I also have a couple of comments as well. I'm looking at the compensation piece of the bill that you have on here, and you are providing payments for the legislative members and the members that are from the public sector. I'm just curious, so how much cost are we expecting here? I know you said you didn't have a fiscal note, but do you have any guesstimates of what the cost would be to the state for something like this, as well as hiring of an executive director and potential staff? How big of a staff are we looking at? You know, overall, what is your ballpark figure for this?
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't know. It's this is modeled on the Washington state legislation, and but I'll tell you this, you know, compared to the millions and millions and millions in tax expenditures, I think it's going to be pretty modest. But I'm certainly not wedded to the structure of the commission. You know, that to me is kind of the peripheral part of the bill, and something that I'm certainly willing to work on and modify if need be. You know, it's not my intention that we create a whole new bureaucracy, but I think that having a bipartisan commission to make a recommendation is important to being able to really, really do this.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I know you said that Oregon has already passed this. Do we have numbers from them on what they've established at all, or could you maybe follow up with me on that piece? I think that would be helpful.
I think Ms. Dalton is indicating she might know a little bit about that. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, Oregon did pass sunsets on their tax credits over, and primarily income tax credits, over a period of 5 years with a commission to look at it. I can find out essentially what they budgeted for their commission. I should say, however, that their commission is doing more than just looking at tax expenditures and tax sunsetting. It's a transparency commission, and it is looking at providing information, particularly over the internet, on all aspects of the Oregon budget, not only the tax expenditures, but some of the direct expenditures and some of the contracting. So there's more going on in that commission, but I will try to find out some information on that.
Representative Anderson.
And Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, the other section that I wanted to ask you some questions about was on the section regarding gifts and grants from nonprofits. Now, aren't some of the nonprofits, wouldn't they be benefiting or potentially losing some of the tax credits or tax expenditures, as you put it? Are we presenting a conflict of interest here if they're able to give gifts to this group that might be deciding whether or not they keep a credit to them or not?
Representative Lee.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, you know, I do think that's a concern, and I think that that's why we have in here that it would be publicly reported. You know, I think we always have that, you know, obviously in our campaign laws, and we constantly have that tension between, you know, being able to accept money for legitimate purposes and possibly having it influence outcomes here at the legislature. And I think the drafting of the bill tries to cut that balance and by having the openness and transparency of it. But if you have a suggestion about how to make that stronger, I certainly would be open to that.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
And then just lastly, Madam Chair, and Representative Liebling, you know, I'm a big person for transparency. I've co-authored several bills as far as that goes. I think it's important for us as a legislative body to provide to our citizens as much information as possible as we can about our overall government structure. My concern that what we're doing here today with this bill is that rather than, I think it's great, I want to do that. I would rather expand it much like Oregon has done, and we need to look at our budget overall on how we're doing things and whether a program should be sunsetted after 10 years. I think that's something that we need to look at. But I also think that that's what our job is as legislators, not some separate commission that has people that are appointed to it that have no electoral responsibility to the citizens of the state. And that's what I get concerned about. I think this is our job as tax members, and I think Representative Lesh pointed that out on his bill, is it's our job to look at these issues and see whether the policies that we're passing make sense for the state. And I, you know, I would love it if every committee spent that time to look at these issues in greater detail. I think that's our responsibility, and I think that we as a state have gotten away from that, and that's what we need to do. But I think it's our job, legislators' job, not
a separate task force that would have no, that the citizens would have no voice.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Anderson. I think we agree on that. What the bill does is it has the commission just make, it has it taking a lot of information and make a recommendation only to give the legislature something to work off of. It in no way would take the responsibility away from the legislature. So it gives us a two-year period to examine that recommendation and reauthorize or tweak those expenditures or let them sunset. So it just takes out the automatic pilot. I mean, I think that it just puts it on our plate in a clear way that I think would make it organizationally easier for us to work with. It in no way forces us to take the recommendation. Just gives us something to work off of and something that hopefully would be a neutral, bipartisan kind of, much the way we get good advice here and it helps everybody.
We're going to take the four people on the list and we're going to stop because we're over. And I think no other committees are meeting and the floor is not meeting, so that's why we're able to do this today. Representative Loeffler, Marquardt, Lesh, Davids. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Liebling. I like the idea of having a regular review of what we do, and the sunset makes it a serious review. But I do have a bit of a concern about the balance in terms of who is doing the review and how that's structured. And I do tend to agree with Representative Anderson that an option is to have just the legislature do it. But if you want a group to actually step outside and get some more input and have more time and energy, I would ask that you re-examine how you've structured this, because you have all the appointments being made by the governor. The only two people who are selected actually by the legislature would be the legislators who were selected to head the tax committees. And so that right away creates, I think, some tension points in terms of the final product. And then it gets exacerbated by the fact that the commissioner of revenue, who is obviously always going to be a gubernatorial appointee, is to create the starting report on how well each of these expenditures have achieved vague goals. And we all know in passing legislation, you can get 63 votes or 68 votes for something and have at least 20 different interpretations of what the goals of that is or why people voted for it. And so I think putting that much of a tilt towards, if you had a governor who loved tax expenditures and didn't think we could do enough and came with a very proactive agenda for that, they could tilt this process to really advantage that. Or if you had someone who absolutely hated them, they could also, in through their appointments and their direction through the commissioner, tilt that as well. And I don't think that's your intent, but I think we really do need to think about what, if you're trying to create that neutral ground to really look at what the impacts are, how do we structurally make that happen, and so that there's ownership by the policy-making bodies that are actually going to act on it.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Representative Liebling. I really appreciate the transparency that this bill makes on tax expenditures. And we wouldn't even be talking about tax expenditures if it wasn't for Chair Lincheski's efforts last year. When we really looked up and down at all of these tax expenditures, I must say I do have the concern about the sunsetting. I agree with Mr. Hesse and Ms. Berger on this, on the sunsetting. I disagree a little bit with their certainty discussion, because poor people, cities, and schools would also like to see certainty too. We all would. But that's no guarantee. But the problem I have with the sunsetting is that I think that any action should require a positive action of both the legislature and the governor. And this was put into law by a positive action of the legislature and the governor, and I think it should be taken out with a positive action of the legislature and the governor. And my concern would be with the sunset is that it could actually lead to no debate. So you could have either the legislature or the governor who did not want to participate in this debate. Let's say they wanted to eliminate it, either one. They could just totally move away from debate and it would just go away. And I think last year, Madam Chair, the strength of everything, even though everyone cringed when you brought up those reforms, I think it was excellent that we had the debate. And so I would be opposed to the sunset portion, even though I think this bill is great and moving in the right direction, because I just think it could actually do some things you don't want. I like the fact that we're debating things, and I think to involve this, the governor and the legislature has to be involved. Look at all we've done with property taxes, and you know, we thought we had all these great ideas, and we don't get them through. Well, that's part of the process. But I hate to see something eliminated because someone didn't want to participate.
Representative Liebling.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Marquardt, thanks for that. That's a very interesting perspective. I just want to say, though, that I think that the debate would be brought to us by whoever was going to lose their tax preference. I don't really see that anybody's tax preference would go away without them coming and saying, whoa, you know, I got to keep this tax preference. So I don't think that we would avoid debate by having a sunset.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Marquardt did bring up what I was going to say with respect to Madam Chair's broaching of the tax expenditures topic, which I think is important. The Chamber doesn't like it, which I guess is to be expected, but Mr. Hesse, with your respect to, you know, we're judged not just by what we pass by, but by what we propose. Now, I fully agree. I find myself consistently doing penance as a Catholic for incorrect thoughts that aren't consistent with the prevailing opinions of the church, Peasant Avanti at the time. And Representative Gardner keeps me in line. So maybe that's a model that the Chamber could follow as well.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a few thoughts here. After having the privilege to serve on Chair Mary Murphy's Cultural Heritage Finance Division, lovingly referred to as the Arts and Crafts Committee, the comment from Representative Liebling that says, oh, it really doesn't take away from the legislature, they still have the final say, has never confronted a commission such as the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, where if you even consider changing one word, you have 5,000 emails, and these people do carry guns. I believe that it would take away a great deal from the legislature's prerogative on the debate. You get a commission such as the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, and might as well just take the legislature out of it, because whatever they say has to go or else. These commissions are supposed to provide suggestions, but when the suggestions become mandates, I think it's taken away from the legislature. And I, to just set up a commission saying that they'll just make suggestions, I may have bought that a couple years ago, but not after serving on the Arts and Crafts Committee. So be careful with commissions.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that, Representative Davids. You know, that's, I don't have a stake in the ground over the commission. I'm just thinking of the best way to do this and get it done. And so, you know, I'm certainly open to other suggestions about how to do it. But I do think that organizationally we need something to work off of, whether that would come from a commission or from the Department of Revenue, or, you know, maybe you would have another suggestion for me offline about how we might work that without creating a monster.
Right. Okay, thanks everyone for sticking around. Representative Wood, would you be willing to move the minutes of April 19th?
So move, Madam Chair.
So Representative Wood moves the April 19th minutes. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. The minutes are adopted, and we're going to lay over Representative Liebling's bill for possible inclusion in the Adams tax bill. We're adjourned. Thanks.